The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Well, another week, another devastating piece of carnage for those most vulnerable among us. This week, President Trump rescinded protections for transgender students that has allowed them to use bathrooms and other facilities according to their gender identity. And I just want to thank all of you who've been out there protesting and marching and calling and posting. This is yet another thing that we're going to have to really fight for. I am excited about today's guest because you know that I strive for diversity on this show, and you know I've made a commitment to have lots of people of color, disabled people, sex workers. I've done shows on economic justice. But I will say that probably the majority of the folks I talk to come from the East and West coasts. Because when we think, I think, of sex positivity and certain centers of sex positivity, we think of New York, San Francisco, LA, maybe Chicago. And of course, that's not the only place where work is being done. And in fact, work that is being done all over the country can be quite specific to where it is. The same stuff that work in one place won't work in another. So let me tell you about today's guest. Kate Shapiro is originally from North Carolina with roots in West Virginia, Georgia, and New York City. Kate is a longtime member of Southerners on New Ground, or SONG, and thrilled to be back home in Georgia. She has been a SONG member since 2006 and joined the staff in 2012. Since 2008, she has worked with Spark Reproductive Justice Now, the Center for Participatory Change, and the Beehive Design Collective, doing youth organizing, capacity building, and popular political education with rural, queer, and immigrant communities. She came to SONG after an amazing stint in rural Wisconsin, working in the historic recall elections, where she had the opportunity to fuse electoral and community organizing strategies. She is a founding and continued member of the Vision and Strategies Council of Kindred Southern Healing Justice Collective. Kate loves making what we need, swimming holes, and all things savory. That's good, Kate, because I love all things sweet. Welcome to Sex Out Loud.
Compliment. Good compliment. So happy to be here, Tristan. Yeah.
We'll go out to eat and no one will feel like there's scarcity. That's good.
Absolutely.
Because you'll eat everything savory and I can just eat
you
everything sweet.
You know, it's salami forever. Absolutely.
So I want to start off by talking about Southerners on New Ground, what the organization is all about, and how you got involved and what you do for them.
Sure. Absolutely. I'm happy to do that. And I just want to say really briefly that it's wonderful to be on this show with you, Tristan, and specifically also just want to name that for myself, the book Opening Up, like, is very much one of my core texts, and has been instrumental in getting my own life together, as well as attempts to help support our regional membership base, and many other LGBTQ people, trying to get our lives, and trying to build the relationships and the intimacy, that we know that we need. So it's also awesome to be able to be talking to you. But yes, Song is a 24-year-old queer liberation organization. We are made up of Black, immigrant, working class, country, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, justice-loving Southerners. We were founded in Durham, North Carolina, by three white lesbians and three Black lesbians, none of whom were doing explicit gay or lesbian organizing. Some of them were doing anti-violence work. Some were part of the women's movement. Others were chasing the Klan, but came together to be like, we actually need to build a political home where we can actually not only bring ourselves full selves individually, but to be able to build across class, race, gender, and sexuality, and be able to defy some of the lies that the right wing has been telling us about ourselves, in terms of trying to pit communities that are experiencing oppression across each other. So, yeah, we do our work through a variety of methods. The core methods that we use are direct action organizing, culture change, coalitions and alliances, and our kinship work, or what we call igniting the kindred. We also organize our direct action organizing around life and death LGBTQ issues. There's a lot of LGBTQ shops that organize around what we identify as quality of life issues, such as gay marriage and what have you, and that is all well and good and is an important fight. But for those of us that are struggling every day to keep a roof over our heads, to keep our families together, to defy Immigration and Customs Enforcement and police, that we have identified criminalization as the core issue that we fight around at a local level, but united regionally. So I'm happy to talk more about that, but that's kind of the overall work that we do. We are membership-based, and we do have members in all 13 states in the South, as well as a number, like hundreds of other members and supporters in other parts of the country, be those Southern exiles, folks that left, or folks that have roots in the South, or also folks that just support our vision and want to get behind it. So you can get behind it from wherever you are, friends.
So as I said in the opener, I think that often often my guests who I talk to on the show, and often what things that we talk about that are happening happen sort of on the East Coast and the West Coast, and we forget all the other projects going on in the country. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because there are these misconceptions about the South and about what it's like to actually be queer in the South. What do you think some of those are, and what is your lived experience as someone who's from there and who lives there now?
Sure. Yes, I mean, I think that there's a ton of misconceptions about the South, and that there is deep and systemic anti-Southern bias. There's tons of misconceptions around the South. I mean, the sort of founding story of Song, and this was in 1993, was actually when the National Gay Lesbian Task Force was having their national big conference, Creating Change, which is the largest LGBTQ sort of progressive-y conference that happens annually, that's been going on for now about 45 years. They called up one of our founders in 93 and said, we want to bring Creating Change to Durham. And, you know, our founder, Mandy Carter, was like, that's cool. All right, what's up? You know, and they were like, is there an airport there? Are the roads paved? Will our people be safe there? Right? And so I tell that story because I think that those sort of statements, like, are illuminating around some of the anti-Southern bias and misconceptions. One, that we don't exist. Two, that it is impossible to live a full and dignified life here, that it is too hostile and that it is too homophobic and transphobic and racist. to be able to ever, you know, stay in your home or stay in the town that you're from. And we do live in really, really, really harsh conditions, right? This is not to say that we don't live in harsh conditions, but it is to say that many of the poisons that we're fighting here in the South in terms of white supremacy, in terms of transphobia, in terms of misogyny, patriarchy, you know, exist everywhere, that they are systemic, that they are in the blood and the water and the founding story of this country, and that they live in the institutions and policies that are, you know, in every city and town in this country. So in terms of my own personal experience, I, you know, was clocked as being a little lesbian, like my first day of ninth grade. People were like, lesbian? And I was like, what? Really? Huh. I knew, like, I sometimes felt tingly, like, around other girls, but I didn't really know I was a lesbian, so I was like, whatever. And then ended up coming out, like, a little bit later in high school, not to my parents, but I think some of the, I was never kicked out of my home, but, like, when I came out to my parents, or was sort of outed by my parents, actually, at the end of high school, I think one of the things that was poignant for me was my father being like, if I had been around more, he's like, this is all my fault. You know, and his best friend is, a Jewish man. He's Jewish himself. And it was just poignant to me because I was like, this actually has nothing to do with you, you know. And so the primary sort of like homophobia that I've experienced has been, sort of in different institutions and like with bystanders and like in the community, but have walked my own path with my family, less with my mother. And, you know, to some extent, my father's come around after 10 or 15 years, but more with my extended family, which sometimes has to do with overt homophobia. But as many of us that are LGBTQ can relate to, it's just the deafening silence. The deafening silence of not asking you how you are, who you're with, who your boo is, anything about yourself, for fear of opening a door where you're going to be like, I'm gay, you know. And so, yeah, and we have many, you know, I have many beloveds that live in the Bay Area. We have many members that have gone to New York City and gone to Chicago and have had to make that decision, right? And we have many members that remain in the closet. And we respect everybody's self-determination around what they need to do to keep themselves and their loved ones safe and to live the lives that they want to live. And we have a vision and a banner that we do most of our work under, which is a banner of free from fear. Right, and the dream and the demand of what would it look like if in all of our southern cities and towns, black people, immigrant people, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people could live in our full dignity and humanity, walk down our streets, and be able to live a life free from fear. So, you know, many of the conditions that we're fighting against are horrific, you know, and I think that what I think a lot of folks need to understand is that some people are coming to consciousness around with the ascendance and the election of Trump, or 45 as we say, is that the South has for decades been the testing ground for the right wing, right, as well as the Southwest. So it's sort of been their laboratory to be able to pilot regressive, racist, transphobic, horrific policies and then be able to export them to other parts of the country, be that the, you know, show your papers, anti-immigrant legislation that started in Arizona and then came to Georgia and then moved nationally, or be that the, you know, so-called bathroom bills, or many other pieces of legislation that the right wing has piloted here to be able to sort of further exploit the anti-Southern sentiment and to recognize that the chokehold, in many ways, of Southern Dixiecrat politicians in our region is very strong, you know, and that for many of us, you know, when people right now are coming to consciousness around, you know, Trump's quote-unquote governance, right, is that for many of us, we've been living in Trump's America for a very long time. And that we know what it is to organize against governments that are unpetitionable, be those state legislatures in Mississippi, Phil Bryant, whoever. So I think that that's the other thing that's interesting is that there's folks that are now like, oh, let's talk about class. Let's talk about rural. Let's talk about country people. Oh, you know, let's talk about the South.
Yeah. Let me interrupt you for 1 sec because we have to go to commercial break pay the bills. But you bring up, you touch on so many issues that I want to dig into. So everyone stay with us. We are going to dig into some of these issues that Kate raises and we will be back after this break.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I want to shout out to my fantastic sponsor, The Pleasure Chest, who wants to help you have the best sex of your life. You can visit their boutiques in New York, LA, and Chicago and enjoy their free weekly workshops offered in the Pleasure Ed program. These are really fantastic classes that span all sorts of diverse topics, and they're for all experience levels, orientations, and interests. You can go to PleasureChest.com for the class schedules, and when you go to a class, you get 15% off. If you make a purchase that night. What's coming up for Pleasure Chest in Chicago, March 8th, Butt Sex Basics with Antoinette Elizabeth. In LA, March 1st, Making a Scene with Mistress Mary and Victor. And in New York City, March 1st, Fantastical Unicorns and Green-Eyed Monsters is a threesome right for you with my friend and colleague and amazing person, Tina Horn. So go to PleasureChest.com, look at the schedule, and if you're there and you shop, use the coupon code Tristan, get a free gift with every purchase. Okay, we're back talking with Kate Shapiro of Song. And Kate, I wanna circle back to some of the things that you talked about in the first segment. And one of them is this notion of life and death LGBT issues. Because I think that in a certain segment among progressives, there's this notion that like, oh wait, didn't you guys like fight for gay marriage and win that? So like everything's cool, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's actually, I mean, is actually not cool at all, That did happen, but there's an ongoing number of things which continue to be challenging for queer people, and especially queer people whose lives are on the margins in other ways as well. So I wonder what you think about that. Why you guys have chosen to focus on those issues, and what some of those issues are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have chosen to focus on those issues because it's a question of life or death. and it's a question of life or death for our constituency and base in a very real way every day. So, I mean, the list of issues is immense. The list of issues around quality of life is immense, as well as around life and death issues. But you know, for us, as I said before, like, the core issue that we're fighting around is criminalization, and that has a bunch of different elements to it, right? So that could be fighting Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the deportation machine that is getting fueled and bigger and nastier and more horrific every day under Trump. Life and death issues are issues around healthcare and around having access to hormones. On the streets or when you're incarcerated. Life and death issues are economic justice issues. Being able to have milk for your babies and bread on your table. There are very little, if any, statewide protections for LGBTQ people in any state in the region. So, yeah, economic justice and racial justice issues, be that around homelessness, be that around violence, be that around intimate violence, state violence, all of those we identify as life or death issues. And that we understand, you know, that the reason why marriage got named as the core issue of our time, or one of them, was because who was leading that fight and who had the money and who had the microphone and who had the access. And that there's incredible organizations that have been working around LGBTQ life and death issues for millennia, for decades, be that also Fierce or Audre Lorde Project or Esperanza Peace and Justice Center in San Antonio. I mean, the list goes on and on. So this is not a new thing, and many of these organizations have been on the front lines for forever. But now we're also in a different moment where the LGBTQ sector broadly is also trying to, you know, reform itself in a moment of incredible political unrest, incredible social movement activity, and incredible repression and backlash. So it sort of remains to be seen. I think a lot of what we talk about, too, is that even prior to Trump's election, you know, but after the passage of marriage, that we were very much like fighting for the soul of the LGBTQ movement. You know, I think we're at a crossroads to see where the movement broadly is going to go, right? There's not questions around many of our organizations and how we're going to align ourselves, and that many of us are, and Song specifically, you know, we're aligning ourselves and have core leadership inside of the movement for Black Lives and Black Lives Matter and with Mi Gente, and are actually finding more alignment with other political formations that are not explicitly LGBTQ, but of course we're everywhere too, you know, in pretty much every organization, and have been part of every movement since the beginning of time, whether we were acknowledged as such or not.
And what was your reaction this week to, I know there are continuing legislative efforts for these bathroom bills, but a pretty clear statement was made this week when the protections that we do have in place around students and public access to spaces was rescinded. What's your thoughts?
I mean, it's clearly horrific. And it just like took me back to the work that we were doing in North Carolina and in South Carolina and in Mississippi last spring, when that wave of bathroom bills hit, you know, and just going back to some of those core methods, because some of it's around, you know, actually confronting power and institutional power and like demonstrating defiance to those that can make those decisions. And then the other part of it is Same thing. How do we actually create sanctuary for trans kids, for genderific, gender-bending kids, for undocumented children? You know, like to say the same question remains around how do we confront and fight institutional and state power, and then how do we build safety on our own? So I was thinking, too, we had we employed a number of different tactics to defy a lot of that proposed legislation and to fight back against that proposed legislation last year. But I was thinking today about these posters that we had one of our members made, and they said, and we made them so that people could use them in a variety of different states, and they said, no closets, no shadows, just a bathroom here, and you're welcome to use it. As just thinking about and moving particular strategies to have people, institutions, businesses, schools, what have you, coffee shops, whatever, be able to flag, literally. I'm like, we know how to flag, you know, like, how do we actually do that to send the signal to our people that we want you as you are, that this is your town too, and that we've got your back, you know, and that it's powerful and important to be able to do that, you know, through mobilizations, through direct actions, online. And it's also something I think that's going to continue to be more and more important in how we do that, like, with our brick-and-mortar institutions and businesses and public spaces that people are coming in and out of every day, you know, not just in our own individual social networks.
Let's talk about our individual social networks for a minute, because I think a lot of people in my network right now are feeling sort of outraged and burnt out and discouraged and on fire. I mean, maybe I'm just describing how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like a range of emotions where sometimes I'm like, I cannot believe this is happening and I want to just run out in the streets. And then sometimes I'm like, it's too overwhelming. And how is it that, you know, we got here? No, I know how we got here. So, and I think, you touched on this a little bit in terms of some of the differences around gay marriage, but I do feel like within social justice circles, there continues to be, in the name of giving everyone a voice, this kind of undercutting and eating our own, among queer people. I just had lunch with a friend, and she asked me the question really directly, which is, the person's going to think this is funny, but she said, you know, I've always wanted to ask someone, why do queer people hate Buck Angel? And, you know, I've had Buck Angel on the show before, and we're not going to go into Buck Angel, but I just thought it was like this like really funny thing, right? It's like, why is this person on Facebook saying Buck Angel's the enemy? And I was like, oh, right, because, you know, Buck Angel wants to take away our rights. No, Buck Angel wants people dead. No. But we do tend to have this sort of infighting piece that I feel like we haven't gotten a grip on.
Yep. Yeah. I have thoughts on that, Kristen. Yes. My brain is going in multiple different directions.
Okay, hold that thought. Okay. We'll take a break. How about that? We'll take a break.
Okay.
You'll like collect your thoughts, and then we'll come back and talk about this kind of infighting among and within progressive movements. Okay, so stay with us, everyone. More after the break with Kate Shapiro.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey, everyone. It's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger,
You'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I want to remind you that coming up is the Explore More Summit, a 10-day virtual summit featuring intimate interviews with experts from around the world on all things sex, relationships, communication, and self-love. All of the talks will air for free on their designated day. So, and trust me, these talks are amazing. They were fantastic last year. They're going to be great again this year. I'm one of the experts. If you register for the summit before March 8th, you get a free mini workbook emailed to you each morning with all kinds of prompts and questions that build on the talks. Go to exploremoresummit.com for all the information. Okay, so we're talking today with Kate Shapiro, a longtime member of Southerners on New Ground, or SONG. And before the break, I asked you about conflict within progressive movements, and you said you had a lot of thoughts on it. So I'm not even gonna say anymore.
My official role inside of SONG is membership director, which essentially means what I say often is that I'm just like one of the epic homosexual wranglers of life. So, in terms of doing a bunch of training and development and support to our campaign sites, our emerging crews, or what people sometimes call chapters, and a bunch of training and development, and a bunch of dealing with conflict and drama. And
I'm the wrangler of conflict and drama. I'm the director of conflict and drama.
That's kind of what my life is. And, yeah, part therapist, part dream crusher, part trainer, all the things.
Right.
I want to talk actually about drama, and then I want to talk about conflict, because I think that like they both are real and like sometimes get conflated, you know. But very much like at SONG and in my own experience, that like I and we recognize drama, quote unquote, or shade, or all the pettiness of life in LGBTQ communities as connected to our own oppression. And that institutional, interpersonal, and internalized oppression manifest in our work and in our interactions all the freaking time. But I think that in sometimes with the pettiness and the drama, that very much in LGBTQ communities, we sometimes have a tendency to take our pain out on each other interpersonally instead of sticking it to the man, right? Or as Black Lives Matter says much more succinctly, turning up on the state instead of on each other. And that, you know, we found that, you know, we have tendency to kind of go horizontal and take our pain out on each other interpersonally. And then really what we're doing in that, we're sucking all the air out of the room, so that we're deprioritizing the hard work of actually dealing with internalized oppression and institutional oppression, right? We're deprioritizing organizing because we'd rather get caught up in the drama. You know, like, there's so many meetings, and this is not just particular to SONG, or even, like, social situations where people are hanging out, and then somebody mentions, you know, chisme in Spanish or some type of gossip, and everybody's eyes blink open, you know, or we see it on social media all the time with people just being dragged through the dust. And I think it very much has to do with like our relationship to selves and our relationship to oppression, you know, and they're very much a lot of our work in terms of organizing, you know, and this is not probably just particular to song, but is around like rebuilding the fabric of our communities, you know, and rebuilding our relationship to ourselves and figuring out how to be in right relationship with others. Because we're not taught how to deal with conflict. We're not taught how to deal with drama. We're taught how to like turn up and be belligerent and like gossipy, you know? So I think to me, like that's some of the like daily grind for those of us that are justice loving people and people of conscience is to be able to like walk out in practice, you know, and try to embody and practice like the words that are coming out of our mouths in terms of our aspirations and our politics and our beliefs, you know. And that is gnarly and that is hard and that is messy and it's embarrassing when you're like, I don't know what to do, you know. But we also often see like there's a conflation often like in organizing spaces between like what's personal and what's political, you know. And like, sure, yeah, the personal is political, fine, but like actually what we see is like oftentimes interpersonal dynamics in the room like hijacking an entire political process, right? Mm-hmm. So we've had to come up with a bunch of different sort of approaches to deal with that. One of them is to be able to just name straight up that there's a lot of different relationships in the room that are going to affect the collective. Our responsibility is to leave those as best we can at the door and or to be able to name them, right? And that's not just about your boo or your ex or whoever you're salty at or whoever you're fucking. It also has to do with who's best friends. It has to do with, like, who's your enemy, you know, and it has to do with who your boo is, right? And that all of those actually affect the collective, and that's our responsibility when we're in movement and when we're in organizations and are trying to do collective work is that we have to think about the we, you know? So there's a certain level, I think, and I don't know if everybody at Song would agree with me on this point, but I have just been thinking about some of the, like, wounding that we receive, like, from homophobia and transphobia and often, you know, classism and racism, what have you. I mean, I'm a Southern white Jew, so I'm obviously a beneficiary of white supremacy every day, but, you know, the majority of our base are folks of color that are LGBTQ, but that we don't actually, because we're so wounded, it actually sometimes makes us more self-absorbed. So we think about our wounding and our pain over the we, you know. And I think that the other point of that, too, is that, like, we are pro moving through conflict, you know, and that, like, we actually see conflict and opportunities to give feedback to each other as a gift and as an investment in each other and an investment in each other's leadership, and that conflict is necessary and inevitable, but that we've actually developed a whole set of, like, a whole code of conduct around what we expect of our leaders and what we expect of each other that have to do with conflict, that have to do with consent, that have to do with not triangulating, that have to do with, like, continuing to grow our power analysis around how power operates inside of ourselves and in the world and what have you. And I think to me that's a little bit of, like, why I found opening up to be so helpful in my own life was it was a little bit too, and I, you know, hand that book out all the time. So hopefully you've gotten a bump in your book sale.
Thank you.
From the sound.
Yes, thank you.
Because it's a little, to me, it's a little bit about covenants, you know, and there's like all of our dreams and all of our desires and what we want our sex life to be and what we want like our partners to be. And there's all that stuff swirling around in us. And then there's the, like, how can we build a container and have some agreements around how we're going to engage and behave and communicate to, like, give us walls, you know? Because sometimes I think we get so caught up in our feelings that, like, we forget about basic conduct and basic agreements that actually help us build those muscles towards being less petty and being more proactive. I have more to say on that, but
I mean, it's not like we have a lot of role models either, right? I mean,
absolutely.
This,
yeah.
it's not like we have role models for dealing with people compassionately and taking a pause before you speak, which is like the antithesis of what goes on social media right now.
Right? Exactly.
Like, I feel like no one even takes a deep breath. They just start typing and hit send. And I feel like it's hard. It's like, I appreciate all that you're saying. You know, one of the things that brings a lot of people to this work is pain. Yep. And then we all show up in the room and like pretend or don't directly confront that all that pain shows up with us too.
Right. Yep.
And we sometimes sort of play it out.
And now we do it like in a off the cuff way. And then we spin out into like a Les processing cyclone that then like sweeps the region, you know, like it's like,
right.
So to me, that's just some of the stuff around conduct and containers and agreements, which is like, how do we want to be treated and how do we want to treat each other? And that we know, you know, my comrade Mary Hooks always says, and she got this from somebody else, she's like, it's called the struggle, not an orgasm. You know, like, it's not called an orgasm. That's not what we're here for. Like, sometimes that's an excellent benefit that we get, you know what I mean? But like, that's not what we're here for. And so I think to me, that's also some of the piece around isolation and exile and longing and desire that like we experience with, you know, a huge portion of our base being highly isolated is that you come to song to get all of your dreams and desires met, you know, and that mm-hmm. that's really a setup because one, what do we look like? Certainly not that, you know. And two, it's like, how do you understand and have empathy and transform people's pain collectively? How do we do that collectively? And how do we also know that the conditions are so dire that, like, to be able to find a political home like song, then you kind of break down sometimes, you know? Like, because you're like, I never thought this was possible, you know? Like, so many people in our base still talk about Mandy Carter, one of our founders, who's African-American lesbian living in Durham, who's like been in the movement for 50 years, amazing. And she used to do these like movie screenings where she would travel around the South and they would be like in public places like libraries or what have you. And it was like, having movies that engage issues around race and sexuality and what have you. And so many people still are like, Mandy Carter was the first black butch that I ever saw in real life. Mm. Like, I'm still here because of Mandy Carter, because she showed me that, like, a reflection of myself that I'd never seen before, you know? And that's similar. I mean, not similar, but it also kind of goes back to the question that you're asking around, like, all the different folks in your social networks that are, like, having all the feels. As am I, you know, where you're like, feels like political whiplash every day. And it's just, you know, powerful to be inside of an organization like Song, where like some of our base is coming into not consciousness, but like being mobilized and activated in a way that they haven't before. Mm-hmm. And that often like falls along lines of race and class, you know? And that like a lot of our like undocumented and black base are like, it's been bad. Hello. And some of them are right. Like, I got to take a break. Like, I actually can't be around white people right now, you know, who are like, we're tearing our hair out, you know, like, so it's just been powerful too, to be like, how do we actually hold the breadth of that and the reality of the different, you know, long-term ancestral and contemporary experiences that our people have been feeling. And be like, hell yeah, to the folks that want to move and, like, move in alignment with the folks that have already been moving, too. You know, with some, not mm-hmm. some deference, but with some respect. You know, they're like, did you guys know how bad it was? And everyone's like, yeah. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Right.
In there, you know?
Yeah. And deference to history and to the work, to the ongoing work that's been going on. Even though some people have now been sort of alerted and, like you said, mobilized, there are people who've been doing the work like Mandy for 50 years. Okay, we got to take another break. Okay. We do have to talk about orgasms, and you brought it up. So great, stay with us, everyone. After this break, Kate and I are going to dig into orgasms. So you don't want to go anywhere.
Great.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, are you feeling depressed or anxious? I know I am. I want to remind you that the Open List features tons and tons of therapists, as well as sexuality and relationship coaches and healthcare providers, other service providers who are poly-aware, kink-competent, sex-positive, queer-affirming, and anti-oppression. If you are looking for a therapist, and who isn't, go to openingup.net and click on the Open List. Or if you are a professional whom this describes, you can get listed on the Open List. And guess what? I'm going to give you a special code for professionals. If you want a free trial for 1 year, use the code OPENTRIAL, all one word, and get it free for a year. Okay. So we're back with Kate Shapiro. And Kate, I loved this thing that you said your friend talked about, which is like, this is called a struggle, not an orgasm. Because it made my brain go in two places. The first place was to recognize also that itself is a binary, because for some of us, an orgasm is a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not a walk in the park at all.
Totally.
For a variety of reasons, right? But for you, where does sexuality fit in this? I think it's a conversation that I've been having with a lot of my peers, because we're all trying to do this sex ed work, and yet we feel, I feel very much called to more life and death issues, to more urgent matters. Where does sexuality fit in organizing for queer people around racial and economic justice?
Good one. Yeah, I mean, I think it's everywhere. You know, and we have, like, we're you know, a gender and sexual liberation organization, as well as, like, fighting for racial and economic justice, because we see those as intertwined. You know, so we keep it raunchy. We keep it sex-filled with consent. We keep it as gay and as scrappy as we possibly can, which I think is part of what kind of quenches us and keeps us here in the work, right? And that it's not just about my identity, you know, but I think to me that's the piece around song, around organizing, around longing and desire, is that there's core things that we know and we understand as LGBTQ people, be that around exile, be that around longing and desire, be that around the struggle to get a fucking orgasm, you know what I mean, and the freedom that comes with that sometimes on the other side, you know. And so I think it's been interesting because some people are like, if you're not talking about, you know, gay marriage, or you're not talking about ENDA, you're not talking about gay issues. So part of it is a framing thing where we're like, gay people are everywhere. And as a unity organization, we want to be engaging in fights that are going to change the lives of our aunties and our cousins and our neighbors. And we are going to be raunchy and feminist and queer as hell the whole way. Come get behind us and come get beside us because there's room for you, you know, even if you're straight, you know. So I think to me, some of that too is like, when I think about gender justice work, like that has to include people of all sexualities, you know what I mean? And all genders, right? We're not going to be able to like smash the gender binary or like transform misogyny or transphobia or what have you without people across all genders. And there's something particular and powerful that I think binds us together inside of song as queer Southerners across race and class that have a vision of transformation. And I think that that's part of, like, I think that that's also why our kinship work is so powerful, is, like, we have an annual membership gathering called Gaycation, you know, and it's, like, 120 folks from across our membership, majority folks of color, like, between the ages of 2 and, like, 80, you know, and it's wild. Like, we have folks that are, like, and it's open space, too. So we have folks that are having political strategy conversations around fighting the right wing. And we have folks that are doing workshops and skill shares around bondage and knot tying. And we have folks that are doing workshops around, like, how to build puppets, you know, like, all in the woods, you know, and then we have folks that are, like, waking up the elders because they're having werewolf sex, you know, and, like, actually have to confront and, like, contend with some of that, which is, like, we are pro-sex. We are pro-werewolf sex. And all I mean by werewolf sex is just the loudest sex of life when you're in the woods.
Okay, I was wondering. I mean, it had a fantastical quality. Okay.
I know. That's just, yeah, so that's what
you
I...
You mean very loud, sort of shameless, loud, shameless sex.
That's what I dubbed it, under the full moon, you know?
Okay.
5 feet from, like, 75-year-old black elders, you know, that are like, we're trying to get up at 6 and, like, cook some shrimp for y'all. Like, what's up? And, like, go get it in and, like, maybe 10 feet further away. You know, so it's just been this interesting thing around negotiations, you know, around how do you negotiate with a base across race and class and age and gender. And that there's room for people to, like, get it in all the way, you know? Like, I also talk about, like, how we should actually have, like, a finder's fee for all the hookups, for all the marriages, for all the best ass of your life that people have found at song, you know, including myself, you know? And that we honor that and we need that because we need each other. And we need to get it in, you know, and it's also powerful to be able to, like, contend with the fact that we're not a social organization. And, like, mm-hmm. we build kinship and we build, like, sexual liberation in order to build political power. And I mean political power in terms of the power of the majority, not necessarily in terms of, like, taking state power. So, you know, some folks are talking about that, too. So.
Well, this is an amazing place to stop because this vision now that I have of this little retreat that you just described
yeah.
pretty fucking cool. But I think it's interesting about like creating space for kind of everyone to get their different needs met and to also prioritize things differently, but to respect that we are going to have different priorities, like as, you know, wherever we are kind of in the lifespan, where we are geographically, where we are, like, you know, hormonally, like, where, you know what I mean?
Yeah. To me, that's about like thinking, it's like, to me, the gaycation is so interesting because it's like an experiment in self-governance, because we're cooking all the food, we're washing all the dishes, we're cleaning the toilets when they're not flushed. And we're like negotiating the nighttime and the dance party and the skills, you know, like it's really, and who's watching the babies, you know, like it's a powerful thing because it gets us back to the we and the like, how do we repair and heal our wounds and find power and solace in each other in order to be able to, you know, rise and fight another day, you know, and think about the we in addition to the I. You know, which I think is some of the culture change piece too.
Yeah. Okay, listen, we're out of time. Thank you so much for this conversation. I don't know about you guys out there listening, but it was exactly what I needed. And it gives me hope, man. It gives me hope.
Cool.
Kate Shapiro is a longtime member of Southerners on New Ground, aka Song. Find out more at southernersonnewground.org. You can also follow Kate on Twitter at Ms. Shaps, M-Z-S-H-A-P-S. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett, Matt, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be Elizabeth McGrath, who is the author of the new book, The Couples Kama Sutra, The Guide to Deepening Your Intimacy with Incredible Sex. It sounds like a stupid book. It's actually not. We'll address that when she gets on. I'm sorry I called it. It's just like, it sounds really like traditional and weird, but actually she's really radical and amazing. So I just want to put that out there. Until then, get me on Facebook or on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, at Tristan Taramino. I just got a message from someone that says that they want to have werewolf sex with me. So I'm just going to wrap this up and say, if you're still listening, yes. And I guess that's all, folks.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.